this up. All right, today is September 25th, 2013. This is the first interview with Donna Silver. We are here at her home in Madison, Wisconsin. My name is Troy Reeves. I'm with the UW-Madison Oral History Program, and we're going to talk to Donna primarily about her time as Secretary of the Academic Staff. So Donna, for sound recording purposes, could you say your name and then spell your last name?
Donna Silver, S-I-L-V-E-R.
Great. I'm going to turn this up just a little bit, and I'm going to get it a little closer to you, but you won't have to speak up. I may have to speak up to get my questions on, but I don't want you to have to worry about it.
Okay.
So, Donna, the first question is sort of the basic question about how you got the job. So how did you get the job as Secretary of Academic Staff?
Well, I had been working at UW System Administration for 23 years, and I was really, and for half of that time, I'd been involved with academic staff and governance, and I was just looking for something new, and I saw this job, and it looked like it was made for me, and so I thought, what do I have to lose? I go ahead and apply, and I got it. But yeah, I was just, the interesting thing is in terms of oral history, the person who got me interested in shared governance in the first place was from the Madison campus, and maybe you've interviewed her, Kathy Middlecamp. She's now faculty, but she was one of the founding mothers, very much involved at the beginning of academic staff governance, and she'd been, I'd brought her in as a speaker for the system programs that I had been working on through the Undergraduate Teaching Improvement Council, which is part of the UW System Academic Affairs, Office of Academic Affairs.
Okay.
And she kept saying, you need to get involved, you're academic staff. And I didn't even know what academic staff was, or that I was academic staff. And I went to the Madison, the system-wide conference was in on the Madison campus that year, and I went, and I was like, wow, I should get involved in this. And so that's how it all started.
So that started while you were at System.
System.
Okay. And was that, I'm sorry, I didn't get the time frame exactly.
So that was like about halfway into my career at System.
All right, so late 90s
maybe? Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Kathy Middlecamp, you say?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, now she's on the faculty.
Okay.
I think at the Nelson Center, but she was academic staff for the longest time in the chemistry department.
Okay. And that's actually someone whose name isn't familiar to me, so thank you for that. We'll have to see if she'd be interested in being interviewed.
And one of the things we did early on, although I'd have to look at the academic staff minutes that were posted for every meeting every week, you know, three, and so I'm not going to go back and do that, but we did have some of the early founders of academic staff governance. Kathy Middlecamp was one of them, Char Tortorisi, Ann Wallace, and I forget who else came, but anyway, they came to speak to ASEC to give them a sense of the history of academic staff governance. So that was one of our summer programs early on when I started, was just getting some of them to talk about, you know, what were the issues that they encountered and what their suggestions were for moving forward. And
now that was when you were secretary? Okay. So that was one of the early things you did, was try to give folks a sense of the history.
And selfishly too. I wanted that as well.
We have interviewed Char, and
Ann is now at the retiree.
Again, Kathy Middlecamp was one name that I haven't heard before, but I think we've tried our best anyway to try to get those early folks to talk to us. So when you got the job as Secretary of Academic Staff, did you replace Colleen? Did she have any words of advice or encouragement?
Well, you know, she was on her way out. I was on my way in. We only overlapped for one day. So it was, as I recall, the office, the air conditioning wasn't on. It was very hot. And we went through a lot. And I filled up a notebook. And that was about, that was the handing off of the torch. And so no, that was it.
So that must have been sometime in July of
2009? Yes. Okay. Yes.
So when we talked on the phone, you had mentioned that you sort of entered, you didn't know it at the time, I don't think anybody knew it at the time, but you entered a perfect storm of 3 years. And one of the first things that happened, at least I think one of the first things that happened, was unit clarification.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk about that first?
Well, you know, I didn't even know what was really going on. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, but one thing that Colleen did say is they say it'll take a year to get used to the job. And she said, give yourself five. I mean, there's just so many facets of academic staff governance. And, you know, UW system had 20 some academic staff. Madison, mm-hmm. but when I came in, had about 8,000. So if it hadn't been for Heather Daniels, who was the chair of ASAC when I came in and really was served as a mentor, I don't even know if I would have known what the ruckus was about. But a number of academic staff received letters saying that they were being considered to be turned into classified staff, mm-hmm. and this was without their say so, and we wrote a letter. I'm trying to find the unit clarification, the resolution.
The 422 and 422A.
Right. So we
should be, if I may, we're going to reference a document that currently resides on the academic staff website, which is basically, and we can talk about your involvement in this, mm-hmm. because you were the person who got these things scanned, or at least oversaw them being scanned and put online.
Right. But there were just a few. There were the most recent ones. What mm-hmm. I did is I went back to the first document, because I kept looking at them, and it was much easier to do it online than to go through these dusty notebooks that were sitting on the shelf, and people would come in. So this was the Wisconsin Professional Employees Council, WPEC, this was a request. The unions wanted to make a grab at these academic staff, and mm-hmm. people were in a tizzy because they were happy being academic staff. Not, mm-hmm. I mean, there were some who were very excited about being unionized, but I think they were the minority.
Mm-hmm.
And so, this came before the assembly, and we passed this resolution, and basically, you know, we opposed the whole process of unit clarification because we felt that someone should have a say in whether they were going to be put into a different position, a classification, and this was going to, you know, the way it was, these letters were sent out, it basically said, you will be transferred without a voice, and in the end, it just sort of fizzled away. Mm-hmm. They backed off. And, you know, I do want to say, and I don't know, that I do have trouble with my memory at this point because of my chemo drugs. So if I'm not so clear, I'll just put it on that. But it was one of the first things that happened. And I think the perfect storm was that it just made people aware that they had a voice, that ASAC and the assembly could speak for them louder than any one individual could speak. Mm-hmm. And so there was more of an interest in shared governance, and it helped me make sure that most of the academic staff assembly districts had representatives. I think we had a really good record of getting people involved in assembly meetings, and mm-hmm. attendance wasn't really an issue after that, because from there, then, you know, we had the Biddy Martin's whole thing with the Badger, what was it called?
New Badger Partnership.
The Badger Partnership. And from there, you had the HR design. So the whole time I was there, it seemed like there was always something on the horizon that was keeping people interested in governance.
Right.
And then more like specifically, one of the very first things that happened, and again, you know, I'm sort of trying to find my way through everything, was that we started the provost, and I guess with Biddy, I'm not even sure of the politics because again, I was so new. Mm-hmm. But they planned to restructure the research enterprise, and all of the academic staff who were involved in that were very concerned about restructuring the graduate school in mm-hmm. part, what that would mean for different research centers across campuses and so ASAC formed an ad hoc committee, and Heather Daniels' suggestion was that I shadow that committee so that I would understand, learn about the graduate school, mm-hmm. and that committee met with all the key players, created a flow chart, and then created a white paper, which is on the academic staff website. And that was the first time, at least for me, and that ASEC actually formed an ad hoc committee mm-hmm. to do something that it just, you know, ASEC was busy doing the day-to-day governance. And if you look at the committees, I was just surprised how many ad hoc committees have turned up while I was secretary.
Okay.
Obviously there was an ad hoc committee on HR design. There was a committee on multiple roles of academic staff. Again, this was an offshoot of the HR design. You know, what is it that academic staff do? And then there's ad hoc committee that was very active, the impact of the budget repair bill. Mm-hmm. Another one that I pushed for was an ad hoc committee on orientation materials. And so what I wanted, this is all over the map, but when I first came in, the office was, there were just stacks of various brochures and handouts that would go into these packets for new academic staff. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of all over the map as far as I was concerned. Again, it didn't all seem logical to me. And so I raised this with ASEC. How can we educate new employees about what it is, who they are? Mm-hmm. And the first thing we did is we automated the letter that went out because that had all been done by hand. And with the VAT, there was just so much hiring going on that just mm-hmm. didn't seem like a good use of staff time. And then we appointed this committee eventually to look at what materials we should make available. Mm-hmm. And that's still a work in progress. So okay. they rewrote the letter. The letter had a lot of links that people could link to instead of having, you know, a bunch mm-hmm. of documents. It cleared out the office mm-hmm. a lot. We didn't have to hold on to all of this. I had budgeted money. What I wanted to do and what ASEC thought was a good idea is to have like a book that would be bound that people would just have as reference. And my hope would be that at some point that still gets done. But it just was one of those projects that, you know, in a perfect world, you'd have time to do these day-to-day things. But there were always things going on mm-hmm. that sort of, you know, never followed through on that. But that was something that I hope that does get accomplished.
Right.
So.
Donna, can I jump in here?
And sure.
It sounds like there's a strand going through here of your interest in using the technology to make things easier. You just mentioned for the orientation,
mm-hmm.
and also earlier we alluded to something that's now escaped my mind. The idea of scanning these documents
mm-hmm.
and getting them online.
Right.
Why was that important for you in terms of your job?
Well, my office was very small. When I came in, there was the secretary and there was an assistant that worked part-time. And basically that assistant, who gave her notice that she was retiring the week after I started my job. So right away, with everything going on, I had to come up with a job description mm-hmm. and hire an assistant. Mm-hmm. And I argued for full-time. But the person who was there was basically her job was the registration for the round table, which was done by hand, and sending out the letters for the new academic staff.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I was concerned, those were, and now that the, both of those don't take very much time at all because it's all automated. So that was huge time saving because there were other things that I thought, you know, the office should be doing. The website, a new website had just started right as I came on board. And it was designed by someone on the communications committee. And as we started putting more and more material on the web, it just didn't have the flexibility we needed. So then we did work with people on the communications committee and created a new website. And then one of the things, as I said, I just wanted to have all the documentation on there because it was just easier for people to search assembly documents if they were there. And then we had hyperlinks in the minutes or the agenda to the minutes so that people would have their documents there and it would be open records. It would be online. So we, you know, used it in that way. And my understanding is that they're going to have another iteration of a website that's easier for posting materials because the one we had, Red Dot, I guess, had a lot of problems and not as much support from Duet. So now I think they're going to get a new system in that's supposed to be even more user-friendly. And I think that's important as we want to get, you know, have a website that's current and has information. It has an RSS feed, our you know, that people can get information, especially when they're, you know, with a Badger partnership or unit clarification, people wanted to know what was going on and when we were in the news. And, you know, the website hopefully does that.
Mm-hmm. So revamping the website, there was a committee that provided input, but then was that something that you had to work with folks at Duet to get that?
Yeah, well, with this committee, because I'm not technologically all that savvy. Mary Johansson, who's the administrative assistant, did a lot too, because she does put a lot on the, on the web.
And was that the person that you hired?
Yes.
Okay, so she's been there throughout your time and now after, now that you've retired.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And the other use of technology, and I may be leaving out some things, but that did not get up and running until after I left, but was an online application for our grants and awards, because all that was done by hand, and it's just too time consuming to sort through all that. And I think there's some bugs, but they're, you know, ironing those out. And I mean, that's there to stay.
Right.
You know, they're not going to go back.
Well, I believe I've received at least two grants in the last 3 years, I think, maybe 4 years. So yes, I appreciate the online aspect of that. I'm not even sure whether it was different the first time I applied, but I just applied and received one last semester. Well, for this semester.
Right.
And the process was slick.
Yes. That was our hope.
So thank you for that.
Yeah.
Just so many places we could go here. So I want to ask some more about these big things that caused this perfect storm, and that's the... We alluded to unit clarification, and then soon after you get, fairly soon, get the idea of the new Badger partnership. Do you recall having initial thoughts about what that was? And then how did academic staff then get together to
well, ASIC was very concerned because academic staff, it's in the statutes, and if you're going to be changing the way the university is administered, you know, it was, we wanted to preserve shared governance, or ASEC wanted to preserve shared governance. So again, you know, I see the secretary's role as really a facilitator to make to take what the activities are of ASEC and get, you know, help them see that through. So it was really ASAC who was very concerned. And again, there were, let me just refer again back to the document, but I know there was a resolution that was passed.
I think I have it as... Where is it? I got response to the principles for the New Badger Partnership, which is document 452.
And 448 is the setting out the principles. We thought that would be wise. And so there were, you know, there were meetings with, and then the resolution for greater flexibilities, which it was like supporting the idea that even if the Badger Partnership didn't go through, there was a need, you know, we recognized that there is a need for more flexibilities for, I mean, Madison, UW-Madison is unlike any of the other institutions of higher ed within the UW system. Mm-hmm. And there, and so that was what that was about. So, yes.
So you talk about being a senior, seeing the role of the Secretary of Academic Staff as facilitator. So just to maybe reiterate here.
Mm-hmm.
So in regards to the New Badger Partnership, you're trying to work with ASEC Assembly and trying to make sure that A, that good information gets out, and then B, if ASIC or the Assembly make a decision about something, that then that resolution gets out.
Gets out, yes. And so that was always, you know, that was something that there wasn't a to-do list, but, you know, one of the first things that I had to do was, okay, who sits on the Legislative Budget Committee? Who sits on the Education Committee? And every time there were resolutions, you know, I would send them out to those committee members. I'd send them to the president of the UW system. I had all these, created all these mail lists for the Board of Regents so that they, I mean, if you write a resolution and nobody reads it, what good is it?
Mm-hmm.
So, but that was a whole process that, you know, after we passed one of our early resolutions, I realized, well, wait a minute, now what?
Right.
And again, it was just helpful to have Heather, who said, that's right, we need to get these out.
Mm-hmm.
And then just compiling those lists, you know, to make sure they were mailed to the appropriate people to read.
Right.
And I only ever got one response back from a state senator. But, you know, one has to hope that they were read. And, of course, they were picked up by the media.
Mm-hmm.
And... But even I don't think I ever really spoke to the media. I would always refer them to the chair of ASEC.
Okay.
So I sort of set, you know, I was in the background, and I really saw myself as just helping things move through in an efficient manner.
Right. I mean, I guess it goes back to, again, seeing yourself as a facilitator, not necessarily a commenter on the action. But
The things that I did take a more active role in really, like mentoring.
Mm.
So the mentoring committee was an ad hoc committee for the longest time. And this was in the process before I came on board, but then they became a standing committee, an academic staff standing committee. Mm-hmm. So they were put into the policies. There was, you know, a chapter written in the policies and procedures. And, but it was a whole new committee, and so I worked closely with them giving them support to get them off the ground, because that's an important function of what academic staff governance did, is to provide these mentorships. And likewise with the area review committees and the distinguished prefix committees had all these policies, but it didn't seem like the feedback I got from the chairs is that they weren't sure what they were doing or why the process was the way it was to put names through. So I brought those, you know, I mentioned this to ASEC, and we had meetings of orientation, or how could we have standardized forms or standardized procedures from one area review committee to another. I worked with HR, people in HR about that, and I did the same thing with the appeals committee. It seemed to me that the appeals process, we never really had a discussion with the attorneys at Madison and system and HR personnel about the appeals process, and some of that seemed really cumbersome and just needed clarification. And so those were things that sort of like we're under the umbrella of the administration of the office. So those were things I took the lead mm-hmm. on. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were things that I wanted to have in place mm-hmm. To make life easier for everyone concerned.
The area review committee. Just to clarify, what is the?
Okay, so those have to do with promotion.
Okay, so it's the same as distinct. That's why you tied it to distinguished
right,
prefix.
Right. Right. Okay. Yeah. And so there's one for humanities, social sciences, physical sciences, engineering, biological, medical sciences, and administrative and students. So it's it is mm-hmm. part of that promotion. But again, you know, these are things that the details have left my brain at the moment. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, so it is, it's a form of recognition. And
okay. And so the processes you just talked about, such as mentoring, mm-hmm. distinguished prefix, appeals process, you saw those as under the umbrella of the administration of mm-hmm. the office.
Right. Okay. Because everything came through my,
right,
my office. So mm-hmm. there's money for that, my time. I mean, I had to go into, you know, making sure that the people who were nominated and reviewed for distinguished prefix title, I had to work with HR on that. But mm-hmm. as a newbie, I wasn't clear what documents went to them and what mm-hmm. went back to the chair or what went to the dean. And so it was just, as I started figuring out what needed to be done, it just made sure it made sense that we would just sit down and all discuss that. We did the same thing with funding the undercoffler, the awards. Like, we never really sat down with the budget people, and that was a whole other administrative challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I did find out by talking to the secretary of the faculty is that the chancellor's awards for the faculty were more than the chancellor's award for academic staff. And so I changed that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just one of those historical oversights. The Board of Regents at one point raised their awards for teaching awards to $5,000. And while the secretary of the faculty had gone and said, hey, our award should be the same as the Board of Regents, no one ever had said that for academic staff.
Mm.
And so, that was one of the things. As soon as I found that out, I asked for it. And of course, the chancellor, of course this should be done. So mm-hmm. that became more equitable.
I'm just writing something down here. Did you find, for the most part, you talk about facilitation and not so much with mm-hmm. ASIC and the assembly, but when you're facilitating meetings of the budget folks mm-hmm. or the chancellor's office,
mm-hmm.
did you find them receptive to wanting to get together and discuss this stuff?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I think they were very, for example, the appeals committee that I wanted people to speak from the different parties, and I thought maybe we'd have 15, 20 people. We had 50 people show up. So there was clearly a need. And it was, people just are in their silos, right? And
mm-hmm.
I think people really appreciated an opportunity to get together and talk through things that concern us all. And so, I think people were very, I just found UW-Madison, the provost's office, and chancellor's office to just be very receptive to whatever we wanted to do and very supportive of the office, which made it a very rewarding job. It didn't feel like I had any adversaries. It was mm-hmm. just all very, mm-hmm. very positive experience all the way around, which is why I was heartbroken when I realized that I had to go on disability, that I just couldn't, right. My health wouldn't allow me to right. stay on. I really mm-hmm. envisioned staying on for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And
and somebody told you needed 5 years to get to know the job
right.
anyway.
So I was just feeling comfortable and, had other ideas. I mean, the big idea early on was the office was, there were a lot of partitions, like cubicle dividers, and there were only two of us in the office, and it just didn't feel like good feng shui for me at any rate. So we tore them all out. And then I had Helen Klebisadl, who is now academic staff at UW-Madison, at the time was working at System, and she's an artist, a Madison artist, and she came and she said, "Oh, look at all the light. I don't know if you've been to the office, but there are these big windows, which I had washed, and, you know, I mean, it was just, and we had it painted after all the cubicle dividers came out. That was how we, it was clear it had to be painted, because you had all these holes in the wall, and... And so she said, "There's so much light, you should make this into an art gallery. You could celebrate what academic staff do on their own time." And so that's what we did. And I made sure that every exhibit, I send out press releases to the State Journal, and they often would have a little blurb about the gallery. Sometimes we'd have elementary school kids coming in to look at the artwork or neighborhood people, and I thought that was a really nice way of just celebrating academic staff, and so that was one of those changes.
It would be easy to find this out, but I want to ask the question just to get it on the record. The academic secretary, academic staff, where is the funding? Who does the secretary report
to? The provost.
Okay. So funding and supervisory comes from the provost.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. But I think Paul DeLuca, well, Paul DeLuca started 2 days before I did as provost. So I think he just, he had enough to deal, he had a lot to deal with just coming on board as well as provost. So I really felt like I worked very closely with Eden Inwairani that first year, just trying to figure it, you know, just learning the ropes. But basically, it's an independent office, although the funding, yes, does come from the provost. But again, they've just been very supportive, whether it's the website or putting, I mean, the big budget items have been the website and putting online process for the grant applications and awards. And we worked collaboratively with that, with HR and the faculty. We all have the same template for awards, so that was a collaborative project as well.
If I may return now to another one of these big, big issues that happened right around the same time as the New Badger Partnership, and that was the budget repair bill. As academic staff, as the secretary of academic staff, could you describe how you worked again, you know, with ASIC and the assembly on that issue?
Well, I'm looking at the document 451. Again, this is where my memory isn't as, you know, probably helpful, again, because I really feel like it was ASIC's work, right? They wrote the documentation, and I sent it out, and I'm sure Heather probably, Heather Daniels, when you were talking to her, she probably could relive all of this, because at one point she even spoke before the legislature. And again, I provided whatever assistance I could in, you know, getting copies made of handouts or, you know, whatever needed to be done in terms of the making academic staff issues and their concerns, getting that out.
Personally, but as a member of the academic staff.
I'm not. I was not an academic staff.
Oh, so you're classified? You well.
No, I served at the pleasure of the provost. This was another issue because I came from outside. Even though I was academic staff, that didn't transfer. That was always... I always thought that I should have been granted academic staff status, but I wasn't.
I did not know that.
Right. Now Heather is, right? Now, so... She also serves at the pleasure, but because she was academic staff, she doesn't lose that. So I could not vote. I was still a member of MASA and ASPRO, but not academic staff. I often talked about we and identified myself as such, but yeah. I think,
So let's I may want to ask some more about the budget repair bill, but you just, you just, tossed out a couple of acronyms there that I want to ask. So I want to ask, I know what MASA is, but I want you to say what MASA is, and then I want to know what the relationship was between the Secretary of the Academic Staff and MASA.
Okay. MASA, Madison, no, I
Academic
can't even,
Staff
Association.
Association.
And this was a group that formed before there was, before shared governance. And currently, they provide social outings for academic staff, and they did. We worked, well, we meaning ASEC, and I helped informational brown bags about all these issues that we've been, the big issues we've been talking about, and they help finance. So there's a very minimal dues of $10 a year. And with that, they co-sponsor the Academic Staff Institute, which was another event that was coordinated from my office. And then we'd usually have a planning committee that included the Secretary of the Academic Staff, some of the people on the MASA board, and some of the people on ASEC that planned that event every, you know, on an annual basis. And then they provided an annual report to the assembly, and was also an opportunity for them to get members, especially after all the stuff about unions came up. They weren't allowed to have the $10 automatically deducted from people's paychecks, so then that was a big issue in how to sustain the membership, where most people become members and then forget about it there, however, for the duration. So we worked in it collaboratively on those kinds of projects. I also requested that they would host the reception for the artist when the gallery, we would have a gallery opening for the, that was timed for the first assembly meeting in September, and then the first assembly meeting at the beginning of the new semester, so like in February. And they were very generous with hosting, giving me money for food. I always felt it was nice to start a semester off with food for academic staff assembly members, and so that became a fun project. And they would, you know, we would always have brochures. Anytime a new academic staff member would come into my office, there were always brochures for MASA and ASPRO. ASPRO is the lobbying group that actually started just with Madison, but now, you know, has interests for all of the UW system. And I really did not, well, ASPRO sometimes would, they would also present a report to the assembly. I can't remember if it was annually, but they did report to the assembly. They provided brown bags for on the issues of the day, especially with the unit clarification and anything that had to do with the assembly, like the budget repair bill. You know that they were there for that, to provide information and get feedback from their membership. And so yes, those. We'd also, so, you know, that was part of the orientation package, right? Everybody would get something from about MASA and ASPRO.
So there's a Secretary of the Academic Staff, there's ASIC, there's the Academic Staff Assembly, there's MASA, there's ASPRO. Are those the sort of the main groups that the Secretary of Academic Staff would work with or would help facilitate things for?
And then there are the standing committees. I think there's seven of those. And then, I mean, we've already mentioned the area reviews. and the distinguished prefects. We also worked with the CASIs, the Committees on Academic Staff Issues.
Okay.
There are a number of those in different colleges. Some are more active than others.
So is the CASI a standing committee within?
No, that's okay. a separate governance. Okay. Yeah. I think, and, you know, this may all change. I mean, at some point, it needs... So the way I understood it is if you look at the districts, they're sort of geographical, but they're also by what people do.
Mm.
So the CASIs are geographical and cross over what people do. So there's, you know, the College of Agriculture and Life Science, or the CASI for the School of Education, whereas a district would be all, you know, either specialized tech people or administrators or teachers, instructors. And so, I mean, that's one of the difficulties about having the districts participate in governance, is that it's a lot of people who don't even know the people in their district. They don't, I mean, how would you meet 100 or so people who are not necessarily geographically in one place? So that's an issue that districting, that's one of the standing committees I think is dealing with now, is what that should look like. So, yeah. And then the standing committees, well, ASEC is a standing committee, the Academic Staff Executive Committee, there's a Communications Committee, the Compensation and Economic Benefits Committee. A lot of times, like ASEC would ask them, and you can see this in the assembly documents, to review at one point the impact of the transportation deficit, which resulted in us all paying for our bus passes, but what the impact was on academic staff. They really did a lot of good work on different issues like that. The Districting and Representation Committee, the new mentoring committee, the Nominating Committee, Professional Development and Recognition Committee, and Personnel Policies and Procedures Committee. So those are the standing committees. They're on the website.
Mm-hmm.
And starting with Heather, well, we both started at the same time, Heather Daniels, we made sure that as chair of ASEC and as secretary of the academic staff, we met with each one of these committee chairs at the beginning of the semester to see what their concerns were, how we could work together. I often attended one of the committee meetings and met the people on the committee. If I was invited, I was happy to do that, talk about what their needs were, what their concerns were. And yeah.
So it might be tough to quantify, but it sounds like a lot of your time could have been spent, like a lot of our time is spent, and that's in meetings or in committees. Is that safe to say?
Yes. Yeah, and that's why it was important to get things automated, you know, so that we had more time to actually make those personal connections. And that's what made the job so exciting, just meeting people and all doing all kinds of interesting work. And there was always, every day was different.
So I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier.
Okay.
And that was, you talked about once you got these resolutions completed, getting them to people.
Mm-hmm.
Was this automated too? I wasn't quite sure whether were email lists or these were actually honest to God letters that you would...
Mostly they were email. Yeah, they were not like shoot them like automated email. Mm-hmm. I would send them out on email. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, as attached letters. I mean, just for the speed of things. Originally, I think everything was done by paper letters, and it just, the volume of work that we had, it just was not practical. Mm-hmm. And as our, I mean, the scanners we had, people could print off a letter with, you know, colored letterhead and signatures. It just made sense to go that way, with appointment letters, communicating in whatever way, you know, made it easier. Mm-hmm.
Not to disparage the office before you got mm-hmm. there, but were there things you got there and got settled and wondered either why they were still doing things this way or why it took so long to... Well, let's just start with why were they still doing things this way?
Because they'd always been done that way.
Okay.
I mean, I think that was one reason... I was hired as I was an outsider. The other people being interviewed were all people who were on campus. I got the clear message from the interview. It was a very extensive interview process. Mm-hmm. I came to campus, I think, 3 different days for my interviews. And the search committee made it very clear they wanted change. And I'm a problem solver. It was a challenge and it was fun, and it seemed that people were happy with the changes that were made. I mean, I realized early on that you may want to make, you know, lots of changes really quickly, but you need to have buy-in from the parties concerned, and so things move slower than, you know, I originally imagined them, but it, you know, step by step, things changed, and I think people were pretty happy with them. I mean, like you said, just taking the online grant, there was a lot of pushback from that. Mm. People wanted it to be done the same way it had always been done. Mm-hmm. I mean, even reviewing the grants, the committee had a very long and detailed rubric, and I was at System, we would award grants for like $10,000, and the review process was yes, no, maybe. Mm-hmm. And here there was the scoring system, and the grants we were giving were for $500, and I just had to bite my tongue, but I just knew there was an easier way. And when you know that all of these academic staff standing committees, academic staff are doing this, and they're basically on their own time above and beyond their jobs, yes, they're given a 1%, you know, I forget what it is, like a 3% of their time could be spent on governance or something, mm-hmm. but basically they're putting on a lot of time. Mm-hmm. You want it to be used in the most productive way. And so changes like that took longer, but, you know, I think that the rubric got simpler and simpler, especially when we went online, because the committee had to realize, well, what's important? How are we going to review these grants, and what do we... You know, how can we work with this online system? So it was a chance to reflect on what was really essential in terms of evaluating mm-hmm. the grants.
Sounds like, again, coming back to automation, mm-hmm. Even though there was pushback as more things got automated, I'm guessing more people found the value in it being automated, which then might have made the next push to automate something.
Right.
Easier.
One would hope, yeah. I mean, I wasn't there really long enough. Like, I never really saw how the grant process actually worked. Mm-hmm. So, yes, but I would hope that that is the case. And also, I think what they saw is that the secretary's office was doing more. Certainly Mary's job. I mean, the round table and new members, well, take up very little of her time. As opposed to her predecessor, when that was basically her job. So because I'm out in meetings a lot, Mary was really, we were a team. She could answer questions, you know, really was involved in that sense. And then when I think I mentioned this to you over the phone, when our parliamentarian finally retired, Mary took the class and became a certified parliamentarian so that she could take on that role because the personnel policies and procedures could have changed ASPP to say we didn't need a parliamentarian, but in lieu of that, we needed one, and she fulfilled that role. So her job really expanded, and I was always very supportive of her having professional, being able to have professional development and grow in her position.
Right. So again, just to clarify, so Secretary of Academic Staff, which for 3 years was you, has an administrative assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And since you got there, that position became full-time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
And that again is Mary
Johansson. Yes. Right. And then as the situation arose, we would hire students. For example, I just did not see that when we initially were stuffing these envelopes for, every month we'd have 100, 200 new academic staff and stuffing these folders of orientation materials. It just didn't seem like a good use of our time.
Mm-hmm.
So Mary would print out the labels, get all the letters, I forget what the term is, but, merged, that's
right.
It. And then we would hire a student. We would share a student with another office, but a student would come in and they would stuff that. That just didn't seem to me to be what Mary should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted her job to be challenging too.
Right.
So those were, but you have to remember that the person who was there before actually addressed the manila envelopes, the office envelopes by hand for each of the new academic staff and wrote in by hand what district they were in.
It just, I know I've said this word a bunch now, it just amazes me that, when you come in at 2009, that it's still a fairly unautomated office.
And I'm not a techie person, so it was lucky that Mary was.
Mm-hmm. But even as a non-techie person, though, I mean, it seems to me you understood that this was a system that should have been, it was an antiquated system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the office, I wanted the office to be a place where people could want to come in. And so we really changed, as I said, we took out all of these dividers, we had the artwork up, and that worked. And we had file cabinets that sort of acted as partitions so that Mary had her privacy and I had mine. And, for good reason, too, because there were people coming in for appeals. That was the whole thing I wasn't really prepared for. As I said, I just had a one-day orientation, and there were all these annual processes that you go through every year. It's the first assembly meeting. It's getting members. It's the orientation for all of the standing committee chairs. It's, there are all these things that set in place, and then all of a sudden you have appeals. Well, where do you fit that in? Or where do you fit in a job search? And, they sort of come out of the blue. And so that's when sometimes it was helpful that, again, the provost's office was extremely supportive with, go ahead, hire a student, to help out here. And I believe that Heather Daniels now has a student working in the office just to get things in order.
Is there anything else on your notes?
Something that sort of, I think, is on the, that, again, a surprise, all of a sudden, at a certain time of the year, I started getting these letters for emergency salary support. And this was a program, I'm not even sure when it started, well before my time, where when academic staff who were researchers and had a track record of bringing in significant funds to the university were between grants, the provost's office would provide support to carry them over until their next grant came through. And that was another project. It's sort of in limbo just because of budget issues now, but there are some people who were awarded these. And so that was just another program that was in our office that needed to be tracked to make sure the money was spent or where the people were in spending the money from the provost's office. So again, just sort of learning things as they crop up.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see. You know, with the furlough issues.
Oh, right, because when you started at the tail end of the furloughs.
No, at the beginning of the furlough. First time I was furloughed. When I came in, the furlough days had just been implemented. Mm. I started in July, okay. So, yeah. And so academic staff, ASAC, well, Heather Daniels, her idea was that, and to use those furlough days, at least one of them, for community service.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we sent out something to CNCS, which are the class, they're non-represented mm. classified staff, mm. and the classified staff and the faculty to see if they wanted to partner with us.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't get much of a response from the faculty, but with CNCS and the classified, we actually worked mm. on that. So for those, was it 2 years of the furlough?
Mm-hmm.
Each of those years, we had a day set aside in May where we worked with United Way and different, in like the, is it the Mortgage Center, to find projects that academic staff and classified CNCS workers could offer their mm-hmm. furlough day for community service.
Mm-hmm.
And that was picked up by the news media. You know, it's like turning lemons into lemonade was our big thing. We had t-shirts and all of that. The t-shirts came from our office. And, you know, so we coordinated that. My understanding now is with the new HR design that the classified have their own, I don't know if it's a secretary now, so mm. they also have an office, but mm. at that point they didn't, so all of those activities were administered from our office and
mm-hmm.
sending out t-shirts and planning the kickoff, you know, getting space and making sure the provost was there or his designee to cheer people on when they picked up their shirts and went off mm-hmm. to do their day of service.
Mm-hmm.
So that all came from our office too.
Okay. I don't want to take up too much more of your time today,
yeah.
But I'm not, you know, I think I'll come back for a follow-up interview, but in case I don't, I think we need to talk about why you had to leave.
Okay. It's very emotional.
Yeah. And I'm sorry about that, but
yeah.
I think we need to get,
okay.
know,
well, basically what happened was I started having in early February, I thought my back went out. And I remember we were just starting the search for the library director, and I just could not carry my computer to the meetings because that search was coming from my office.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, I mean, I'd had back problems before, and at any rate, little did I know I was functioning with a fractured vertebrae and a compressed, I mean, my body was falling apart, mm-hmm. but I didn't know it. I thought I was just living through this terrible pain, and Mary would hear me open my file cabinet and scream in pain. And so finally, you know, it just wasn't getting better. And I went to the doctor, and my doctor, was wondering if it could be cancer, and then I ended up having another fracture and going to the ER, and they diagnosed me as having multiple myeloma. And that's when I realized, you know, academic staff who are doctors do amazing work at this camp, you know, at this institution,
mm-hmm.
and made me want to rethink how we district. They're busy saving lives. I shouldn't be harassing them. All my doctors would say, gee, your name is very familiar.
Mm.
I get emails from you asking me to be
mm-hmm.
representing my district. But yeah, so I was diagnosed with this. And usually the prognosis for multiple myeloma is pretty good. But for me, it had been in my system for about 10 years, they think, because it had mutated. And it was the mutation that at the time they gave me 2 years, and that's when I decided I need to I can't work. Well, and I was in just too much pain. Mm-hmm. So, but at the very beginning, I didn't know I had 2 years, right? And I was going to come back. And I really do think I Skyped into meetings. And I think it really helped me get through my transplant. Mm-hmm. I was in the hospital for a month getting a stem cell first getting the stem cell transplant and then recovering. Mm-hmm. But it was after that it became clear I couldn't come back. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So your official...
So I would think it was in November.
It was November.
Yeah.
November 2012.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I guess what happened was, and again, you have just... I mean, there's so many people who are just so amazing on this campus, but the people at 21 North Park Street were saying, well, you know, you need to get all your disability papers in before you retire. Something I probably wouldn't have thought about, but there you have it, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yes. So I just needed to go on disability. And I mean, so far I'm in remission. Mm-hmm. I'm beating the odds. Mm-hmm. But I still have not recovered from the transplant. I'm still just really fatigued and tired. And I'm taking chemo every, right. You know, three weeks out of every month I'm on chemo. Mm-hmm. And it takes it out of you.
Right.
So.
Well, let's try to end on a more positive note.
Then. Yeah, okay.
So... Again, you know, I may listen through this and decide I need to come back and ask a few more questions. But if I don't, I want to ask you, again, it was a short period of time, but what you think your legacy might be as Secretary of Academic Staff?
Well, I would think that having an office where people feel welcome and, I mean, I know I have complete faith that Heather is going to carry, you know, make that continue where people feel safe coming and talking about their issues. The art gallery, I think, is a great idea. It's a good way of publicizing who academic staff are, not only within the university, but the actual community. And I would hope that that would continue. And the other thing that probably won't get any real recognition is the fact that I was able to get the Chancellor's Awards up for academic staff, that they are just as valued as faculty, and I think that was really, I mean, I'm very proud of that. Mm-hmm. Even though it was just a matter of asking, if you don't ask, it just isn't going to happen, and so now we have that.
Donna, is there anything else on your list there, or anything that you want to make sure you get on the record before we...
No, I think that's probably, I mean, it was, for me... just a perfect job. Mm-hmm. I'm really, I just, and Mary will tell you, I mean, I'd walk in and say, just so happy to be here. It's just a beautiful, you know, the office felt good. It just was happy. I mean, not too many people can say that when they go to work, that they love their job. And I really, really did. So I'm glad it's in good hands. And it seems like they're off to a good start this semester. And, I think I may have a hand in keeping the gallery going for a little bit. Heather said that's one thing I might be able to help out with, and hope to go to the roundtables. I used to enjoy doing that too, you know, finding interesting speakers throughout the campus.
Right.
And I mean, academic staff, they've just been amazingly supportive through all of this, sending me letters and flowers and bringing me food and... I was only there 3 years, you know, and to have that kind of support is just really, it's just means a lot. Mm-hmm.
Well, Donna, thank you very much for the time you gave me today. I appreciate it. So this concludes an oral history interview with Donna Silver.